Let's join in a spirit of prayer and meditation. Spirit of life and love, God of many names, we are grateful to be gathered together today for the green earth, for the diversity of life, and the color that draws us into the mystery, beauty, and love that we long to be a part of. Joy and grief are woven fine when we open our hearts to love as parents, partners, spouses, and friends. The sure risk of loss shadows us, and yet our spirits would shrivel and atrophy without it. It is faith that allows us to step in and embrace that love. Let this congregation be a vessel that together holds the fullness of life. Let us hold this moment in silence. So be it, and amen.
Our ancient reading this morning is from the Talmud. A rabbi asks his students, "How do you know the first moment dawn has arrived?" After a great silence, one pipes up, "When you can tell the difference between a sheep and a dog." The rabbi shakes his head no. Another offers, "When you can tell the difference between a fig tree and an olive tree." Again, the rabbi shakes his head no. There are no other answers. The rabbi circles their silence and walks between them. "You know the first moment of dawn has arrived when you look into the eyes of another human being and see yourself." Our modern reading is from The Tao of Pooh by Benjamin Hoff. So to remove the bounce from Tigger, Rabbit came up with another one of his famous plans. Rabbit, Pooh, and Piglet would take Tigger to some place at the top of the forest where he'd never been and lose him there. And from then on, he would be a small and sorry Tigger who bounced no more. Well, so much for cleverness, as Eeyore might say. Because as things turned out, Rabbit got everyone lost, including himself. Everyone but Tigger, that is. Tiggers don't get lost, it so happens, not even at the mist at the top of the forest. And that proved to be very useful. Pooh and Piglet found their way back after a while and went home with Christopher Robin. Meanwhile, Tigger was tearing around the forest, making loud yapping noises for Rabbit. And at last, a very small and sorry rabbit heard him. And the small and sorry rabbit rushed into the mist at the noise, and it suddenly turned into Tigger, a friendly Tigger, a grand Tigger, a large and helpful Tigger, a Tigger who bounced, if he bounced at all, in just the beautiful way a Tigger ought to bounce. "Oh, Tigger, I am glad to see you," cried Rabbit. Each of us has something special hidden inside somewhere. The wise are who they are. They work with what they've got and do what they can do. We need to recognize and trust our own inner nature and not lose sight of it. For within the ugly duckling is the swan. Inside the bouncy Tigger is the rescuer who knows the way. And in each of us is something special.
Soul dancing with mental illness. Do you remember the first time you learned to dance? Some of you may have begun dancing so young that you don't remember not dancing. When my first child, Sarah, was a baby, I loved to dance with her in my arms in the kitchen to the radio. It was a delightful break in our daily round of baby care and housekeeping. When I was a young teenager in middle school, I remember a friend offering to teach me how to dance. It was the hitchhiker dance to this song. A thumb goes up, a car goes by. It's nearly 1 a.m. and here am I, hitching a ride, doot, doot, doot. Hitching a ride, gotta get me home, doot, 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 to the morning light. So I'll never forget that song or that dance. Dancing is a natural way of expressing ourselves to music. Still, there are steps and moves to learn so that we can expand our repertoire and dance throughout our lives. Dancing can also be a form of meditation and spiritual expression, as illustrated by this part of a mystical poem by Rumi. Bring into motion your amber scattering trees. Bring into dancing the souls of the Sufis. Sun, moon, and stars dancing around the circle. We dancing in the midst, set that midst a-dancing. Do you remember the first time you became aware of mental illness? Maybe someone in your family lived with a mental illness. Maybe someone in your neighborhood experienced mental illness. Maybe someone famous acknowledged their mental illness. Maybe you lived for quite a while before you encountered mental illness in someone or in yourself. When I was around 4, my best friend Ellen, who lived next door, came into my bedroom in tears. I can't take it anymore. I'm not allowed to tell anyone, but Philip screams so much at night, and I don't know what to do. It turned out that her brother Philip had developed a kind of mental illness, and his family was trying to take care of him with the help of medical professionals. In attempting to keep Philip's problem a secret, Ellen's family perpetuated the socially approved response to a problem that is stigmatized. Don't tell. Fortunately, my friend had realized that not being able to express her reality was hurting her, and she broke that rule. In breaking the rule, Ellen got the support and acknowledgement she needed to get through her brother's episodes, his treatment, and eventual recovery. I remember being 12 or 13 and reading the book Sybil, which was the story of a woman with multiple personalities. Later on, Sally Field played the role in a movie. I was fascinated by what was going on with this woman, yet I did not have a real-life context to put it in. As far as I knew, no one in my family or my community had a problem like this. Mental illness was a strange and exotic condition when I was young. I think that many of us are unprepared for mental illness when we encounter it, in ourselves, in those we love, and or in strangers we barely know. May is Mental Health Month and has been promoted by Mental Health America since 1949. This organization is committed to raising awareness of mental health conditions and to promoting mental wellness for all. This year, the first theme is Do More for 1 in 4. 1 in 4 American adults lives with a diagnosable, treatable mental health condition, and they can go on to live full and productive lives. When we look at the definition of mental illness in the dictionary, we find this. Mental illness is any of various conditions characterized by impairment of an individual's normal, cognitive, emotional, or behavioral functioning, and caused by social, psychological, biochemical, genetic, or other factors such as infection or head trauma. This is an adequate, if rather lifeless, summation of what can be generally understood as mental illness. Plato wrote that the greatest mistake in the treatment of diseases is that there are physicians for the body and physicians for the soul, although the two cannot be separated. I think that dancing is a metaphor for the process of mental illness. There are steps along the way. Some are taught, some are sensed. It is a part of the large dance of life in which we all engage. As many of you know, I work in the field of substance addiction treatment. How does this qualify me to speak to you today about mental illness? Well, it turns out that a significant proportion, anywhere from 50 to 80%, of the people with whom we work have co-occurring disorders. This means that people may have substance abuse problems as well as mental health disorders. Also, like any minister preparing a sermon, I have done some research. And thirdly, I have been diagnosed with a mental illness myself. About 15 years ago, I was diagnosed with depression, and I spent a number of years before and after the diagnosis going to therapy. So from three different angles, I approached the topic of mental health with you. If you remember the offering story, that had three angles too: the Navy ship, the radio, and the lighthouse. The late George Carlin had an amazing way with humor and language. He could track things in the human condition and make sense of them from new and provocative angles, and make us laugh at the same time. Please note I've managed to take the humor, out of this particular bit, but not the insight. One time on the Comedy Channel, he pointed out how language can remove and or sanitize a difficult condition. Carlin explained that in the First World War, soldiers who suffered from their wartime experiences were identified as having shell shock. This is a basic, almost direct title for behaviors, thoughts, and feelings that were the result of dealing with the carnage and destruction of wartime. During the Second World War, the same condition was called battle fatigue. In downgrading shock to fatigue, somehow the mental and emotional symptoms were diluted. With the Korean and Vietnam Wars, this collection of behaviors was renamed operational exhaustion. By dressing up the words, we put a further distance between the actual cause and its result. Carlin pointed out that with the renaming of the same condition for soldiers returning from Afghanistan and Iraq, it now became PTSD, or post-traumatic stress disorder. And we added another veil to cover the fear, anxiety, and nightmares which can accompany this mental illness. So in showing us this movement from shell shock to battle fatigue to operational exhaustion and finally PTSD, George Carlin illustrated how we indicate our discomfort with the pain of living with mental illness. A recent PBS documentary, Brain Injury Dialogues, showed a sociologist, Dr. Mark Sherry, talking about the disability tragedy model and that it had gone out the window. It has been replaced by a disability pride movement. Where change due to disability was once seen as a deficit, it has become an asset as people with disabilities express themselves more fully. As a Unitarian Universalist, I cherish our ability to bring our whole selves to this community. We belong to a religious community which respects the right of everyone to dignity, self-respect, the ongoing search for truth and meaning, and the interdependent web of all existence. Our spiritual dance is one of inclusion, even as we learn new steps and better moves. My experiences at Integrity House and here at Montclair with the Mental Health Adventures Group have led me to another conclusion about tragedy changing to pride. Let's look at the five stages of the soul as described by Harry R. Moody. With these stages, we can begin to see the connection that Plato was discussing with healing on both physical and spiritual dimensions. Dr. Moody's stages are the call, the search, the struggle, the breakthrough, and the return. In understanding the dance of mental illness as a spiritual dance with these steps, we can expand our awareness of mental wellness. When we look at the story of Tigger and Rabbit in the reading from the Tao of Pooh, we can see these stages. The call begins with Rabbit determining that Tigger is a danger to others and himself because his exuberant bouncing led to Eeyore falling into the river. Rabbit feels called to change, to change Tigger as a way to improve the world. The second stage, the search, involves Rabbit making up a plan. Rabbit doesn't spend a lot of time searching for guidance or teaching. He just wants to solve the problem of Tigger and his bounce, so he devises his own strategy. Rabbit's plan to lose Tigger in the forest so that his bounce no longer troubles anyone turns this into the third stage, the struggle. Rabbit's quest to lose Tigger turns into Rabbit getting seriously lost. This struggle leads to the fourth stage, the breakthrough. The lostness of Rabbit propels him to this brilliant insight. Tigger is actually friendly, grand, large, helpful, and bouncing, and all of those things are good. "Oh, Tigger, I am glad to see you," he says. And thus Rabbit arrives at the fifth stage, the return, when he goes back to his usual life with Pooh and Christopher Robin and all the others who live in and near the 100-acre wood. Yet he returns with a new appreciation for Tigger and his bouncing. Thus Rabbit is transformed. There are a multiplicity of conditions that fall into the general category of mental illness, such as depression, anxiety disorders, and schizophrenia. Each has their own development, symptoms, and healing journeys. At times, they can be used to destroy, weed out, and separate people. The critical spiritual crises of mental illness include despair, fear, lack of trust, alienation, and restlessness. Who here has experienced one or more of these spiritual crises? Rather than mental illness, I think of us all as having a dimension of mental health within us, and each of us moves along the dimension in a positive or negative direction, depending on many variables. Now, we can apply the five stages of the soul to the dance of mental health. We begin to hear the call of our soul when we first have indications of things not going well with us, feelings of despair, of fear, of loneliness, of alienation, restlessness, and all our suffering give us reasons to answer the call of our soul for the search. We're not always clear for what we are searching. It may be comfort, but we'll be getting more uncomfortable before we begin to find healing. As May Sarton said, pain is the greatest teacher. Joy and happiness are what we take and do not question, but pain forces us to think and to make connections, to sort out what is what, to discover what has been happening to cause it. People who are dancing with mental healthness go on a search or a quest, a mythical journey that, like Odysseus, involves time, dramatic situations, new characters, death-defying adventures, and the music keeps changing. Dealing with the medical system in this country adds layers to this questing dance, which becomes part of the struggle. We wrestle with what our mental healthness means to our lives, our sense of ourselves, and the meaning of our existence. In describing the struggle, Dr. Moody wrote these words: "These challenges may not look to us like the devils and dragons depicted in myth, but they surely behave like them. They haunt us and appear as insensitive bosses, faithless lovers, ungrateful children, mounting bills, accidents, rejection slips, tax audits, all the large and small woes that beset the modern pilgrim." One of the things we learn in the struggle is that it might be easier to do this with company. I remember one of the Beatles saying that Elvis was alone and that made his success and fame harder to handle, but John, Paul, George, and Ringo had each other as companions along the crazy journey of music and notoriety. We can all use allies and amigos on our journeys, no matter where we are going. I also want to put in here, every morning at the service is a combination of many people doing amazing things like singing and playing instruments and all the wonderful readings you've been doing. One of the members of our Mental Health Adventures group brought things that are on the back table if you want. One is a guide to mental health and related services, and another is a collection of recommended books and some music if you want to do more exploring. The breakthrough for many people who are on mental health adventures is that it is a spiritual transformation, a move from tragedy to pride, an understanding that what was once seen as a deficit is now an asset. Let's go back to Pooh. For a long time, they looked at the river beneath them, saying nothing, and the river said nothing too, for it felt very quiet and peaceful on this summer afternoon. "Tigger is all right, really," said Piglet lazily. "Of course he is," said Christopher Robin. "Everybody is, really," said Pooh. "That's what I think. But I don't suppose I'm right," he said. "Of course you are," said Christopher Robin. "We're all right." Martha Graham, who was a great dancer and choreographer, wrote that there is a vitality, a life force, a quickening that is translated through you into action. And because there is only one of you in all time, this expression is unique. And if you block it, it will never exist through any other medium, and it will be lost. Whatever our struggles, we do end up on a journey, which can become a dance for our souls. The second theme of Mental Health Month is live well. It's essential for your potential. This is how we reach the last and perhaps the next stage, the return. Sarah Polley, an actor and director, said that the ways in which people are damaged are the ways in which they're strong. It's what makes people interesting, what they've overcome and how, and what they haven't, and how that's become a good thing. Almost everyone's life is both a gorgeous story and a tragedy. I think being alive is really, really hard. And I'm constantly stunned and amazed by people who make it interesting and beautiful. Every Sunday, we light our chalice to beauty, truth, and love. Every day, we have the opportunity to dance the dance of mental wellness. May we hear the spirit of the music of our spirit, and let our life dance lightly on the edges of time. May we be able to look into the eyes of another and see ourselves. May we feel suffering and despair and know that transformation is possible. May we understand that we are more than a diagnosis and we are not alone. And may we know that everyone is all right, just as Pooh says, because of where they are on their dancing journey. Shalom, blessed be. Amen, salam, namaste. My closing words are adapted from two pieces, one by Tess Baumberger and the other by John Morgan. Let us go forth to do the work of our lives, the work of living. May our lives touch those in need of love and healing. May we bear witness to our faith and to our disbelief, for even when to do so seems too great a risk. In the end, it won't matter how much we have, but how much we have given. It won't matter how much we know, but rather how well we live. And it won't matter how much we believe or what we believe, but it will matter how we treat the ones we meet and the difference we can make. Thank you. May the prayers of our hearts and the songs of our lips shared in this holy hour of worship be with us now and all the days to come. As we extinguish our chalice, our worship has ended. Let our service begin.